This is the Everything EV Podcast by EV Powered.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Everything EV Podcast, a weekly show that brings you the latest news, views and opinions from every corner of the EV industry. I'm your host, Charlie Atkinson, and in these episodes we'll be discussing everything to do with electric travel, so whether it be cars, bikes, boats or even planes, we'll have it covered. We'll also be speaking to people from within the industry to get their views on the EV space, as well as other features such as electric car reviews, electric motorsport coverage, and much, much more along the way. This podcast is available on all streaming platforms, so be sure to subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from to receive every single episode as soon as it's released. And please do go back and check out all our other episodes too. This week, we have a very special episode as we're joined by one of the most influential people within the EV industry, Quentin Wilson. Quentin is an award-winning motoring journalist and transport campaigner, having founded Fair Charge, which is a national campaign that aims to ensure the UK has the right EV-related policies for the environment, the economy, and for drivers. In this episode, Quentin shares his own electric vehicle story, which started back in his Top Gear days, before discussing the pressing issue of misinformation within the electric vehicle sector. Quentin, thanks for taking the time to chat to us this morning. It's really great to have you on the podcast. Now, we've got loads to talk about, and I'm sure we're going to go off on loads of different tangents about Fair Charge and all the different things going on in the EV industry at the moment. But I just wanted to circle back to your very own EV journey, really, and when that all began and when you, your sort of EV journey started.
Okay, well, it started a long, long time ago, back in, I think, 1997, when I was filming for Top Gear in LA, and General Motors had allowed us to drive the new EV1, that billion-pound electric car that they did. And it was great because I was one of the first UK journalists to drive it. And Top Gear had this kind of, as it still does, this sort of ambivalence about electric cars, as we all did, to be fair. And I got into this thing and thought, this is interesting. I drove it around LA. And I remember the moment, exactly the moment we were at a set of traffic lights, and I'm in the EV1, and there's a guy in a Volvo T5 estate with Oakley sunglasses on looking over at me with a grin frozen on his window. And I thought, okay, I know what's going to happen now. So the lights changed and we both gunned it. And this thing just scorched off and left this turbocharged T5 Volvo in its slipstream. And that was the moment that I thought, whoa, so silent, so quick, so incredibly beguiling, that I said in the piece to camera later on in the test that, you know, this is the future. And that was then and this is now, that it took such a long time to get where we are today. And the fact that if you watch Who Killed the Electric Car, that film, you can see that GM crushed all the EV ones because they know that it would have been a threat to their combustion car empire. It's taken so long to be here where we can now do 250 miles routinely in most electric cars, and some of them will do 400 and 500 miles. So that was the moment when it all, for me, came together. And then I bought my first one, which was a little Mitsubishi IMEV. That would be 2009, and ran that every day for a couple of years, and then bought a Citroen C0, and then a Renault Zoe and a Vauxhall Ampera. So all that time I was, as a motoring journalist, buying EVs with my own money and driving them every day, because I thought this technology really had to be tested. And there was this kind of disdain, particularly from Clarkson, who just looked at me and said, you know, was something unmentionable. It worked for me. I mean, those first gen EVs would do 50 miles to one charge, 30 miles if you put the heater on. But I never ran out of juice. They were great. And the women the mums on the school run would point and say, "Why does he drive that funny little car?" And my wife would just shrug her shoulders. And in that short space of time, 10 years, the amount of technology that's just been crammed into that period is amazing when you think about it. To go from 50 miles to 250, 300 miles on one charge is incredible. And when you look at the time that the internal combustion engines had, which is over 100 years, to get where it has today, imagine where we're going to be in 20 years or even 30. So that was my EV journey, and I've kind of loved every minute of it. And I was campaigning for lower fuel duty for that period, 2010 to 2020, I guess. And then I just had this Damocene moment where I said, okay, the technology for electric cars now works, so it's time to stop campaigning for lower fuel duty, that was yesterday's technology, and campaign for electric cars. So I started up this not-for-profit campaign group called Fair Charge 2 years ago, and here we are.
On the subject of Fair Charge as well, I know there's an embargo on the press release that I got through this morning, but I just wanted to, I haven't had a chance to read it, so this is the perfect opportunity, yeah, really, for you.
You're
to
exclusive, Charlie.
Exactly. So, it's an EV charging charter between Fair Charge and the RAC. So I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that, really, what it entails and the sort of overall mission of Fair Charge as well, and how the two align.
Well, Fair Charge is to increase the understanding and awareness of EVs, particularly among politicians. So our mission is to just, you know, tell it like it is with factual accuracy, because there's so much, Charlie, out there that is against EVs. The fossil fuel industry has obviously spent quite a lot of money putting out all this misinformation, and we see it on a regular basis, and it's our job now, and we partnered with Robert Llewellyn at Fully Charged to kind of shoot this stuff down as soon as it appears. So, you know, the stuff you read routinely about bridges collapsing because of the weight of electric cars causing potholes, we're going to lose our front gardens because of electric cars, because of the home charging. What else? All the mechanics. Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. And there was a survey the other day in the mail that said that real men don't drive EVs. And you just think, where has this come from? You know? So that's our job. And it's kind of full time. We're at the coalface every day shooting this stuff down. And on the 19th of September, forgive the shameless plug, Robert Llewellyn and I will be at the QE Centre in London, just opposite Parliament, doing an event where we, you know, bust all these myths, and we'll do it in a funny, amusing way, and give you proof that, you know, these ones are just ridiculous. But because the problem is, Charlie, this is, people are reading this in the mainstream media, and it's putting them off adoption. You know, they come up to us and they say, even people who are thinking of buying Teslas say, is it as bad as I've been reading? You know, will the batteries fail in 3 years? And will it cost me the price of the car to get another one? And are they depreciating so fast? And what about the children in the DRC who mine for the cobalt and all this sort of stuff? So, you know, we will be talking really quite clearly and in an amusing way about all these myths. And it's politicians we need to talk to as well, because I had a supporter write to me to say that he'd contacted his MP about electric cars, and the MP had written back saying, yeah, you don't want to buy one of those because they're much less efficient, energy efficient than petrol cars. Where does this come from? You know, so that these MPs are regurgitating all the stuff they're reading on Facebook and Twitter and all this is quite serious, because they're going to be voting for EV industrial policies. And we've got, you know, 25 battery factories planned in Europe. You've got 130 countries signed up to net zero. We have one battery factory in this country. Two if we build the Tata one. So we're going to fall behind massively and lose all those industrial, economic and job opportunities. So there's a kind of serious side to this as well, in terms of energy independence and air quality and giving people cheaper, renewable, sustainable energy rather than fossil fuels.
Yeah, it sort of ties back into when I was asking about your EV journey, really, because you said even back then, like you mentioned Clarkson, that there was like an overall scepticism towards electric vehicles. But then you talk about all the innovation and all the tech that's happened to electric vehicles, but we're still at the same point where you're getting a lot of people that say, oh, are they just going to spontaneously combust, or our bridge is going to fall down, our car park's going to fall down? So it feels like the technology has made loads of progress and we have come a long way, but there's still that misinformation that exists. So like you said, this is probably the biggest issue facing the electric vehicle market at the moment. If I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the amount of coverage in newspapers, and we've got somebody who's just, you know, kind of logging this, and sometimes you get five anti-EV stories in a day in a single newspaper website. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but with that amount of negativity being pumped in on a regular basis, is this just editors looking for clickbait in the sense that, you know, an EV story was gets attention? Or is it something kind of darker where, you know, fossil fuel advertisers are saying, well, you know, don't promote electric cars? Giles Corran did that celebrated piece on his Che Guevara piece in the Times, which he couldn't get to work for him, and he handed it back in high dudgeon to Jaguar. But, you know, Giles was trying to charge it on an extension car cord onto his 13 amp plug in the house. So of course it took a long time to charge. He didn't have a charging box. And he's since bought a BMW i3 for running around town. And he told me that column in the Times got the most clicks of any column ever. So the editor said, look, this is great. So you kind of get a snapshot of where we are. But it's mischievous in the sense that, you know, if it is gonna destabilize the energy transition, which I believe is so important for my kids, your kids, and their kids, this is wrong, isn't it? And this idea of relying on fossil fuels, as we've always done, which are monopolistic regimes in foreign countries whose real ambition is just to keep the price as high as possible. Are we still going to carry on doing that as we've done for years and years and years? And as I said, having campaigned for lowering fuel duty, you can see that it makes no difference to these oil majors. There's no kind of moral high ground that they feel they should occupy. They just want to make as much money as possible for their shareholders. And you've got countries like Russia and like Saudi Arabia who don't want electrification, absolutely. So who knows what the real reason is, but you're absolutely right that there is this tsunami of negativity, which is affecting the way people think. Having said that, this August, the figures from the SMMT, 21% of all cars made in this country are plug-in. So, you know, that's great. And we're looking at what in 2024, the ZEV mandate says it's 22%. So we're almost there. So come this contentious moment in 2030, where we stop selling combustion cars and vans, we might already be there by 2027, 2028, or certainly 80%. So there's a big body of people, I think it's 3 million at the moment out there, driving plug-in cars, who are obviously not running out of juice and not having a terrible time. All the surveys we look at say that, you know, the satisfaction of having an EV is about 80 to 90%. And I think, you know, only 8% say they would go back to a combustion car. So you've got 92% saying, we're going to stick with our EVs. And those voices, those EV drivers who have been doing it for years, we don't hear them. They just quietly get on with your life. And you mentioned about the charger charter that we've done with the RAC. That was designed round input we got from literally hundreds and hundreds of EV drivers through the RAC. And they told us what they wanted. So we've written this charger charter, and hopefully, and I've written to the new Secretary of State for Energy and Net Zero to support this charger and say, this is our ambition to build a world-class infrastructure charging system that makes us fit for the future. So that gets launched on Thursday. So it's quite important. And that's the kind of stuff we do. We're just trying to guide government policy. And we talk to Number 10, and I would talk to Grant Shapps a lot while he was still in position. And hopefully I'll be able to talk to the new secretary and just make sure they understand the enormity of these industrial policies, that we need to have certainty for all the car manufacturers who talk to us as well and say, look, we need this 2030 date. We absolutely need the Z mandate. We need to plan these model cycles 7 years in advance. And there's a bunch of MPs who want to derail all this, and they want to. I mean, Farage and I had a ding dong on GB News the other day about we need a referendum on 2030. No, we don't. We just need to understand if we don't do this, then our motor industry will just go somewhere else. They'll just go to a much more, you know, financially friendly environment like the US or Europe.
Yeah, I think the charging charter as well that you've done with the REC is really important, because you and I will both know, working in the media, that bad news travels a lot further than good news. So if you have got chargers that aren't working and have been out of order for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and you've got charging but where disabled people can't use chargers, that all goes towards that misinformation and painting that picture that we're not ready for electric vehicles. Electric vehicles aren't for everyone. And it's that never-ending cycle, isn't it? So we have to almost get the product in order first, in order so that there's more good news stories for people to shout about.
And I think, Charlie, it's important to say right now that electric cars aren't for everybody, and there will be this group of people who will never ever drive them or buy them. And, you know, out of my cold dead hands, you take my diesel, and that's fine, you know, because actually you can buy a brand new car up to 2035, so you've got what, 12 years, that runs on petrol, you know, a hybrid, and some hybrids, well, all hybrids, you don't really need to plug them in, you know, you can just run it on petrol, and that's fine. So the hysteria that this is this cliff edge, and, you know, I'll never be able to buy a combustion car, you can buy it right up until 2030 or right up until 2035, and then you'll be able to carry on buying secondhand ones. So it's not the apocalypse that the press would have us believe.
Yeah, no, and it all, like I said, it all goes back to that misinformation. There's almost a big education piece that's needed as well, because I mean, my dad's a prime example. We've done a couple of videos on EV powered where he's an old school petrol head. Like you said, you'll have to take his diesel car keys out of his cold, dead hands. But I do think it goes back to, if you can get these people behind the wheel of an electric car, the experience is 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100. It's almost so much better than they expect. And they don't necessarily turn straight around and go, oh, I'm converted or whatever. But it makes them see electric vehicles in a different light, doesn't it?
But lots of them do, Charlie. Lots of them we did a little thing on Fair Charge Twitter, and said, you know, when was the moment you decided you wanted to have an electric car in your life? And they said that the minute I drove one. And this is the great irony, that we are being lectured by people who have never driven an electric car why we shouldn't buy an electric car. And that kind of makes no sense. And with every conversation we have with journalists, that the opening gambit is, so you've got an electric car? Okay, no. You've driven an electric car? Okay, no. Have you been in an electric car? And maybe you get a few answers. And then you say, have you charged an electric car? What, on a regular? And so you just get the picture that these people have never even sat in an electric car in most cases. So we offer, look, we'll take you out, we'll do this, we can film it, but no. So there is a kind of emotional agenda among some people that this is wrong. And they bring in all these reasons why we shouldn't be doing this as a society and as individuals. But I would say to anybody listening who hasn't got an EV, just drive one, you know, and your life will change. I remember the first time I drove a Tesla Model 3 Performance, and it was just amazing. And the first time I drove, and this is when I met Elon Musk back in, I don't know, 2004 or something, had a long chat to him when he was launching the Tesla Roadster, and he was starry-eyed, and he explained this vision of electric cars that would go for 350 miles, and he'd build this charging system which was going to be almost as easy as filling up with gas, and then he gave me the keys to this Tesla Roadster, and I was still quite cynical because it was a Lotus Elise reworked, but I took it out on the M4, and I'm just going, whoa, this is amazing. And then this guy in a Ferrari 308 GTV draws next to me and rolls his window. What's that? I said, it's Tesla. I said, race you. And so he's off. And again, the same thing happened. I absolutely smoked him. So it's that moment, which you will, I guarantee, never, ever forget in your life. You just go, whoa, if this is the future, I want it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going, I know we've spoken a lot about the misinformation side of the EV industry, but it felt like a couple of months ago there was a big turning point in the industry with the Rowan Atkinson column. And one thing I wanted to speak about was that, although that was probably for only 24 hours, quite damaging to the industry. What was, I thought, a really good sign for the industry was just how many people came out and dismissed all of that and fought the battle. And that's a big part of it as well. And it, I know that's a lot of what you're trying to do with Fully Charged with Robert Llewellyn as well, is to fight and kick back against things like that, isn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Charlie. And I remember that weekend very clearly because, you know, you switch on your phone and there it was. And, you know, Rowan is a respected automotive figure. And so much of that was wrong. And, you know, I was spitting out my cornflakes. So my PR director and I, we got onto The Guardian and we said, look, you know, this is tosh. So much of it is wrong. And we got other people to come in, as you say, and The Guardian, bless them, they printed a fact check piece after it and said, actually, there's a lot of this that is wrong and the hydrogen is far too expensive and it's going to be very labor intensive and you'll need a whole infrastructure. And it was largely, you know, derided by lots of people. But it's like, Charlie, you get a handful of feathers and you blow them and they go all over the place and you can never, ever get them back. And that's what that piece did. And I remember a friend of mine at Fully Charged, Dan Caesar, was in Holland and he got pulled over by a cop in an electric car. So they had a chat and the cop said, no, I have read Rowan Atkinson, electric cars are no good. So that shows you the kind of reach and damage that sort of thing does. And that's why, you know, Robert Llewellyn and I and Fully Charged and Fair Charge are, you know, really, really adamant that we have to shoot this stuff down before it gets embedded. And the thing with digital media is it's there forever. So if you put in, are electric cars any good? This is all the stuff that comes up. So all of us, you know, who have been on this journey and understand how good these things are, almost have a duty to make sure that we, as the people who have been on this journey and know what these cars do, how reliable they are, how easy they are to charge, how far they go, we have a duty to tell other people. And then the maintenance thing, I mean, you know, I've had a Tesla Model 3 for 3 years, 36,000 miles. It went for its first MOT. It's only just needing tires after 36,000 miles, which is pretty good. And the maintenance in those 3 years, Charlie, I've had one brake check, and that was only because I wasn't using, the regen was on all the time, so the discs got rusty because they were never used, so I had to take it in and get them freed off. 120 quid in 3 years, so that's £40 a year in maintenance. And then I talked to Tusker, who's a leasing company, and they partner with us to give us data on EVs. And they say that the maintenance costs on their EV fleet compared to their combustion fleet is 40 to 50% less in terms of maintenance and garage bills. So that's something which never gets on the radar. People just don't. And they think they're, you know, you're going to need a new battery in 3 years when, you know, there are Tesla Model 3 taxis out there with 400,000 miles on the original motors and the original batteries.
Yeah, it just goes to show you, doesn't it, like you said with your feather analogy, like for all the fighting and all the kicking back we can do, it's the bad news that sticks, isn't it? But I just wanted to, we've obviously, a big angle of this podcast has been misinformation, so just for a little bit of fun, because I know we've spoken about a couple of different stories, but what have been some of the weirdest or the most outrageous anti-EV claims you've come across in all of this? Because I know I come across loads almost on a daily basis, but what have been some of the most outrageous claims that you've heard over the past couple of years?
I mean, the ship, well, I can't remember the name of it. You know, you remember those, the ship that caught fire, and it instantly the media said that this was caused by electric cars. And they brought the ship in and they've taken all the burnt cars off and they found that the electric cars, they weren't the cause of the fire. None of them were burnt. And instantly it's just this thing about electric cars spontaneously combust. But when you look at the figures, a combustion car is 11 times more likely to catch fire than an electric car. And you wonder where this comes from. There was one story in the Mail the other day about a Tesla Model 3 running out of juice and blocking the road for 9 hours because, you know, the handbrake was on and they couldn't free it because there was no way of charging the battery. Now, that's one car, one electric car that's run out of juice out of 1.3 million. And the story should have been, wow, you know, it ran out of juice, but this is the only one we've been able to find that's actually, you know, blocked a road. You're not seeing them on a daily basis, you know, just broken down by the roadside, and far more combustion cars break down and block roads than electric cars. I mean, I think the front gardens that we're going to lose, the nation will lose its front gardens because of EV charging. Which is kind of like, oh dear, you know, we've lost our front gardens already because of parking. And somehow the EV is the cause of all our woes. And then you mentioned car parks, and no car park has collapsed, Charlie. You know, we've checked into this. And just as you can't say that EVs cause potholes, what about a 44-ton lorry? You know, and it's just kind of, just think about this, be logical about this. But it doesn't seem to be. And then also the fact that EVs are more polluting than fossil fuel cars. Where does that come from? You know, I mean, initially, the CO2 emitted by battery production is more than making a combustion engine car. But then that carbon debt is paid off in 15,000 miles, and then it starts to really, really improve. And the life cycle of that EV for 25 years, the amount of carbon that isn't emitted from you know, the tailpipe, it's much, much more better. It's much better for the atmosphere than any combustion car. But I think probably the worst one is the brakes, in the sense that EVs give off particulates, damaging, toxic, life-threatening particulates from their brakes. Now, if you know anything about EVs, you'll understand that we don't really use our brakes because of regen. And as I said earlier with the Tesla, you know, I use them so little that the discs rust. So how does that work? How do we give off these particulates when brake pads are lasting up to 100, 150,000 miles? So clearly they're not wearing out, and clearly they're not giving out toxic dust. So, you know, but there'll be more. I mean, you know, the fact that all our mechanics will be out of work and on the dole, you know, I think you should look on the other side and say, look, there are huge opportunities for retraining and for clean, high-tech, highly paid EV maintenance jobs, because there's a huge shortage of experts who can check over EVs.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to come on to, because obviously we've spoken about all of this and some of the longer term implications of all the misinformation and all the negative press surrounding electric vehicles. But considering that side of thing, but also the growth that the EV market has made over the last few years, it is growing considerably. So in your opinion, what does the landscape of the electric vehicle market look like for the next few years? Is it going to continue to grow at the same speed, or do you think this level of misinformation, negative press, is going to have some sort of lasting impact on that overall growth?
I think it very much depends on government policy. We managed to get Sunak to pledge, and Gove to pledge, that 2030 was immovable, and that they wouldn't tinker too much with the Z mandate, apart from just fine details. Now, there's a what's the word here I'm looking for? Coven of MPs, right wing backbench MPs, who don't like this and who are doing their best to completely destabilize it. Now, we must make sure that they don't go down this road where they could roll back 2035, because that means all the car manufacturers would really be in deep trouble. So that's a clear and present danger. And there was a House of Commons debate on energy yesterday, where MPs were talking about, you know, batteries end up in landfill and they're catastrophic for the environment. Hello, you know, no battery goes to landfill because it's worth far, far too much money. Just look on eBay and you can see, you know, a Tesla Model 3 battery is $7,000. A used one, and an Nissan Leaf one is still $5,000. So this kind of level of ignorance is really bad when these people vote for EV policies. I think what we are seeing is better EVs coming onto the market, longer ranges, more interesting designs. Whereas, you know, it was always quite limited, your choice, and now you can get, you know, everything from estates. We haven't really got a convertible apart from the Fiat 500e convertible, but they will come. That will stimulate consumer demand. But the biggest threat to it is this, as you say, this misinformation. If we're allowed to say, look, the rest of the world is doing this really, really well, and people are buying them, and they're working, the technology works, and allow it to get to a stage where it's not a question now of subsidies supporting the market. It's a question of honesty and integrity. People saying, look, this tech works. It's much, much better than hydrogen. We can look at hydrogen, absolutely, and we should have other technologies in parallel with electrification, but the costs of hydrogen would be huge. And e-fuels as well, let's carry on looking at those, but you know, they still combust, there are still hydrocarbons that come out of them. But if we're allowed to just carry on the way we were doing, and it's not towed out to sea and sunk by gunfire by vested interests, then we will see 50% penetration of EVs reasonably quickly in the next 3 or 4 years, because the market, and I know at the moment it's fleet market and not so much private buyers, but then there are other reasons for that. You know, the economy is not great at the moment, but we are seeing this penetration. And what we also need to talk about is the advantages of buying EVs used. Because the prices are much, much, much lower, and in some cases lower than the combustion equivalent. So that's a conversation that really isn't being had at the moment, where you can buy a secondhand Tesla Model 3 for sub 20 grand and some really, really nice, you know, Zoes for 5 grand with sensible mileage. So, you know, we need to understand that people need to be able to buy these things. And the French have done this brilliant scheme where you can have an EV for 100 euros a month. And that might be good, because at Fair Charge, we're always saying, look, this is about electrification that's accessible. So we've had these early adopters, these pioneers who have proved the technology, and they're usually middle class. Now we need to make it more accessible to people in lower demographics, because they have more of a right to clean air, in fact, than everybody else, because often they live in areas where the air isn't good. So that's something that I think is really important, to make EVs accessible to all.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Quentin, it's been great to chat to you. It's something I could talk about for all day, basically. So, but one thing is quite good to be chatting to you today, because at the weekend it is World EV Day. So just to finish things up, I wanted to get your message to someone that maybe is a little bit sceptical of electric vehicles, has never driven one before, maybe doesn't really believe the hype or whatever. So on World EV Day, what would be your message to an old school petrol head that absolutely hates EVs? How would you try and convert them?
Well, there's two things. I'm an old school petrol head. You know, I spent all my broadcasting career telling people to buy Jensen Interceptors and Maserati Ghiblis and Ferrari Daytonas. So, you know, I've come from the dark side, if you like. And I've still got a V8 Mustang 1964. But the one piece of advice I would give is that if you doubt all this, then talk to somebody who owns an electric car. Don't read the stuff in the tabloids and actually the broadsheets as well, the Telegraph, the Times, the Mail. Talk to somebody who's owned an EV, and they will tell you what it's like without fear or favor. And that's really the only way to get information, isn't it? We know that social media is not an exact science, and the stuff we read is often tosh. Talk to someone who's owned, driven, and likes an EV. I mean, and there are people out there who've had them for 10 years, you know, and have done 200,000-300,000 miles. Those are the voices you need to connect with to be able to make a value judgment whether EVs are for you or not.
That's all for this episode. Many thanks for listening. And if you liked it, then please do check out all our other episodes, and be sure to subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from to make sure you get every single episode as soon as it's released. For daily news coverage, features and much more, you can also head over to evpowered.co.uk. Thanks once again for listening, and we'll see you on the very next episode of the Everything EV podcast.